This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Triggered. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, as you know, joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. I'm going to need a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a minute this morning, okay?
You go ahead and take a minute, as this is the penultimate
boom
Golic and Wingo show.
Nailed it.
And also
nailed it.
The penultimate show to my career on ESPN Radio as well. Right? Did I get that right?
You
Did
nailed
I say
it twice.
All in context?
You nailed penultimate twice and all that.
And how great is it that we get to talk to all you Notre Dame haters out there?
Oh, man, it's nice.
I am working.
There's one sitting right on this set.
I'm working through some things right now. Notre Dame just gets to do whatever they want.
No.
Whenever they want.
They get.
However they want it.
They get approached to do things. They get
That's
asked.
Fair.
To
That's
do
fair.
Things.
That's
they,
fair.
Last I checked, they didn't have a gun in their hand and forcing anybody to do anything.
We even look. You even heard. We're sharing money.
That's exactly right.
And
leave you some cab fare.
Yeah.
And we need to talk about a world in which Patrick Mahomes is only the fourth best player in the National.
Told you guys. I told you guys 2 years ago.
Get out of here with this.
I told you guys 2 years ago. Why are they making that switch?
You're really going to bump Alex Smith for the fourth best player in 2020?
We're gonna send that list. Return to sender right now.
All
okay?
I have to say is
get out of here.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But the guys in front of them, any quarterback that are ahead, we won't give it away, though you could probably think of it, are going to go renegotiate now. Say, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We're ahead of the guy that's getting $500 million. So I want to redo my deal.
So, imagine how hard some GMs are going to laugh when agents actually probably try that for a second.
Let me show you this list. Get out. Get gone.
Can we please quit trying to deflect, Trey?
Yeah.
It's Notre Dame talk.
That
right
is
now.
True.
Give them the news, baby boy.
So Notre Dame pre-2020. Conference, please. We don't need a conference. Notre Dame in 2020. Being in a conference just feels right this year. It just feels right this year. And essentially, that's what happened yesterday when the ACC came out with their plans for the season, which includes a 10-game conference season plus one game out of conference, and Notre Dame is officially, or unofficially, essentially an ACC member this year.
Yeah, the ACC Board of Directors voted that Notre Dame would play that slate of games. They were scheduled to play six conference games already based on
their
agreement.
They do that every year right now based on the agreement.
Because all other Notre Dame sports are in the ACC. For anyone who is aware of that and only consumes college
football. Which is
weird, football.
Say for hockey, I think they're in the Big Ten, but who knows?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
weird.
It's,
but
exactly.
For the most part,
they
yeah.
do whatever they want.
Notre Dame's a la carte system of sports. But
I prefer buffet.
So the ACC Board of Governors voted on that, though. He mentioned the 10-plus-1 model that has become one of those in vogue terms in college football right now for the 10 conference games. Again, Notre Dame is only adding 4 to a slate that they were already going to play in that. And the Board of Directors also voted that Notre Dame would be eligible to play in the ACC Championship this year because of that. It's going to take place in Charlotte either December 12th or December 19th. And then they would also be eligible were they not accepted into the college football playoff for the ACC spot in the Orange Bowl, one of the tie-ins that they've got there for what was formerly a BCS, now a New Year's Six game.
And how it's going to work is they're not going to have the two divisions this year. It's going to be one division of 15 teams, and the two best winning percentages are going to play in the conference championship game. Note here, Clemson and Notre Dame do play this year. They were scheduled to play this year. There was talk, I think, of maybe moving that game closer to the beginning of the season. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition or not. So they are already scheduled to play. They're going to be considered the top two teams in the conference this year. So, but again, one division, not two divisions, 15 teams. And the money shared in the conference, Notre Dame is sharing their NBC money for their home games. Again, everybody, if you didn't know, which I'm sure most people do, especially the people that like to throw darts at Notre Dame, they're getting money from NBC for their home games, and Notre Dame is splitting that money basically 15 ways with the 15 teams in the ACC.
So, shared equally, by the way. That's a significant thing.
In all honesty, this is a win-win.
Yes,
it really is. For all our joking around about Notre Dame, it's still a monster name out there. it brings in viewers, it brings in revenue, and the revenue is going to get split amongst all the teams now in the ACC. So for this year and how this is working, as long as there are games and we can play, this is a good thing.
And that should be noted that in all of this, the ACC has said, provided the health officials that they consult
right.
deem
yes.
it safe to proceed with all of this, this is the plan that they've got in place for right now. And I think that's important to note. And I think what you said there, when Notre Dame entered in this relationship with the ACC years ago, I always thought it was kind of to prepare for that pie in the sky, major conference realignment, world of super conferences that I think exists somewhere off in the not too distant future in college football. It just happens that all of those same pipelines can lead you to a situation where when something like a pandemic hits, now you've got a conference that we saw. Part of the reason you can have an ACC network is because of that tie-in with a brand like Notre Dame. We certainly saw what it did for some of the road environments. A lot of people point to the Duke game last year, a night primetime game on the ACC network where Duke is packed because Notre Dame is in town. All of these things, in addition to walking in there with the money that you can offer for this season, make it a very mutually beneficial partnership because Notre Dame did need games because of what happened with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten going conference only.
So that's sort of the micro in terms of what's going to happen in the ACC. And the one out-of-conference game has to be played in the home state of the ACC.
And I'll say really quickly, as a Notre Dame person, and Mike, I'm sure you would feel that this way as well, if you don't know the history of Notre Dame Navy, you need to look it up on why Notre Dame said they will play Navy every single year. There's a great history to this game. That could be in jeopardy, just for what Trey was going to say. The plus one is an out-of-conference game, but it has to be played in a home state of an ACC team. So if Notre Dame, they were supposed to open with Navy in Ireland, and it's a Navy home game. It's not going to be in Ireland, so if they play, it was going to be in Maryland, in Annapolis, Maryland. Well, if you play an out-of-conference game, it has to be in the home state of an ACC team. So that would not let that game happen in Maryland, right?
Yes.
Notre Dame couldn't play in Navy in Maryland. So
unless they want to play some sort of history card where Maryland used to be in the ACC, we're grandfathered in here.
The other game that Notre Dame could possibly play is they had Arkansas on the schedule, and that game was supposed to be in Notre Dame. Now we're going to have to wait and hear what's going on, and we'll play some sound about the SEC, but this 10-plus-1 model seems to be the way people are going right now, but it's going to be interesting what happens. And I'm just saying that on a personal note from the Notre Dame Navy traditional game that's been going on that I hope they can find a way to have that.
So that's the sort of interior thought process and discussion just in the ACC alone. But then when you try and extrapolate it out, our Heather Dinich on SportsCenter on how the ACC decision could affect all the other conferences.
Well, let's start with the SEC. And right before we got on the show here, I got a statement from Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. He said he's not about to speculate on anything that might be floating out there. He said, we continue our discussions focused on the return of fall sports, including football. We will announce any decisions at the appropriate time. That's a statement from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. I can tell you that the SEC presidents have a previously scheduled video conference tomorrow. So everybody's watching that. Big 12 Conference Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told me that the Big 12 presidents are going to be meeting on Monday, and they will be presented 4 or 5 different scheduling models. He said, we are going to arm them with all the information they need to make a decision if that's what they want to do.
So we'll see. Will they go conference only? Will they go conference and plus one like this? We still need to hear from, obviously, the Big 12 as well. If they just went conference only, remember, the SEC, I think it was in 2017, spent $45 million on those, hey, come take your whooping and take this check, you know, during the season when you play the smaller teams who get paid a good amount of money, which helps their coffers at their schools, but that would eliminate those games if they went to conference only. So we'll see if they do that. Or do this conference plus one.
Yeah, and I think Andy Staples pointed this out in an article that he mentioned, but the ACC choosing to do this now is important timeline-wise because as you go forward, now if the SEC decides to go true conference only, they become the, you know, for lack of a better term, the bad guy in this situation who would prevent these in-state rivalries from happening.
Right.
This 10-plus-1 model for being possible and all this, that would be relevant for Notre Dame and that potential Arkansas matchup as well, since those games have to be played again in the home state of the ACC team.
And you heard Heather mention Bob Bowlesby a little later on. We'll play some sound from the Big 12 commissioner about the possibility of, if they have to, doing the thing that is the last chance or last survival route, which would be playing spring football.
Doing the thing in the spring?
Doing. Oh, look at you. I feel like... I feel like it's all coming to fruition.
Hot. I'm feeling hot this morning.
It's all coming to fruition right now.
Wow, look at that.
Cliff's just being nice now.
Rim shots to start the morning. Trey is trying so desperately to get out of this segment. He has been so made so uncomfortable by the privilege afforded to Notre Dame through all of this. He is disgusted.
He still wants to talk about baseball suspensions now.
Searching for a break.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
Laura Rutledge is with us, ESPN SEC Nation NFL Live host. You can follow her on Twitter, at Laura Rutledge. Simplicity is always best. Laura, good morning. Thanks for being with us this morning. What's your thoughts on Notre Dame and now officially, unofficially being part of the ACC for a year?
I love it. If we can figure out some way to get college football in as safely as possible and to have Notre Dame be a big part of that, I love it. And I think, you know, look, the people out there that are like, well, now that this is happening, that's going to be the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future. I don't know about that. I think everyone looks at this year and circles it and says it's a weird year. And that's even a very low key way to put it. So I think it's great. I would love to see Notre Dame, you know, be back in the college football playoff. And to me, you know, this could be a really nice way to do that, because you're looking at, you know, being part of a conference every single week of the season, whatever that looks like, and being in a good position where, you know, competitive advantage as well as the win percentage and all of the things that they're going to factor in from the college football playoff committee standpoint will really be high.
So, Laura, three of the Power Fives have made their decisions. SEC, there is a meeting today, and for the Big 12, it's on Monday. Would you expect somewhat of the same type of scheduling out of those two conferences at this point?
I think so. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what the Big 12 does. I think the SEC may be similar to the ACC in the way that they try and lay this out. The Big 12 has been, you know, at times they've had a few coaches and even some of their presidents with a little bit more trepidation with the way they've proceeded. And so they're going to be presented with 4 to 5 plans on Monday, Heather Dinich with some great reporting there. And when they look at all those scheduling plans, they'll come up with something, you know, that makes sense for them. I wouldn't be shocked if it's a little bit different from the ACC and SEC, just because that's how they've proceeded so far. So I'm just going off the recent history there. But I mean, it's good to see some schedules out there and something that looks like some college football could be played. I think the main thing, and one of the things that is going to continue to be brought up, I was just talking to an athletic director a couple days ago about this. They're laying this out. They're doing everything they can to try and make this make sense and to try to get toward playing football as quickly as possible in the fall. But the safety is still going to be paramount. It has to be for these student athletes. And that's the way that they're trying to operate here. And when you think about the idea of having these guys, you know, playing football, that's one thing. They haven't welcomed the student body back on campus yet. And I think that's where a lot of athletic directors are concerned.
Laura, and I'm curious with that, because we saw one of the most recent examples that underscores all of the fears that we have when it comes to students being back on campus, and it's what's going on at Rutgers right now. 15 players testing positive there, linked potentially back to what they believe could be an on-campus party in a lot of that. Has that one started to reverberate through college football yet, and college in general yet, as far as coaches, athletic directors looking and seeing that? Michigan State shut down also in the Big Ten right now just for positive tests in their shutting down activity. Is that stuff still kind of looming for a lot of these teams?
Yeah, Colorado State too is another recent example. And I think it is. I mean, I think what you're looking at here is the inability to control, you know, 18 to 21 and 22 year olds in every single moment of their life. And these are not paid athletes. This is not, there's no achievable bubble environment in college sports, and definitely not in college football. And so I think when you look around, I mean, the Rutgers stories have kind of come out. There are so many, and I'm sure you guys know some too, that haven't, you know, reached mainstream yet, but that are just rumors around there, and they are reverberating throughout college college football of examples where, you know, guys haven't followed the protocol that the coaching staff would like them to follow. And that, you know, even above that, I mean, the CDC would like them to follow, right? So it's hard to control all of this. And I think there's this, I run into a lot of fans, maybe on social media. Well, that's the only place I'd run into them at this point, being quarantined. But anyway, on social media, they're like, man, you know, there are these people that don't want college football. That's absolutely not the case. Everyone wants it so badly, but it's just so incredibly complicated. It's always been the most complicated when it comes to trying to bring sports back.
Talking to Laura Rutledge with us, NFL Live host, SEC Nation host with us here on Golic and Wingo. And I guess that becomes the part. You're right. Obviously, everybody wants it, but no one wants it at the expense of everyone's health and safety. But that's going to take, obviously, buy-in from the student athletes. And we've seen that at certain campuses where it's been successful. That's been the case. I wonder, and seeing this from Major League Baseball and their adjustment to what's gone on with the Marlins, they announced that every team's going to be traveling with a compliance officer who ensures players and staff properly follow the league's protocols. Could we essentially see a chaperone in college football, you think, Laura, on these staffs for some of their players and what goes on?
Yeah, I mean, I think they kind of already have it. It just hasn't been necessarily for this. You'd have to probably get a couple at least for, you know, every team. There's just so many guys and there's so many different, you know, things going on. And maybe, I mean, I think that there are so many things that they're trying to think through here and every single plan. I mean, you guys have heard Greg Sankey said it to you guys so many times where they've got all these different plans and then contingency plans on top of that. And those things are part of them. I mean, I have definitely heard that mentioned of, hey, we're going to have a medical advisor is what they would call it. Who would be, you know, they already are getting advice from medical personnel, but they would have somebody, you know, who really was instructed to monitor the way that people were acting and to make sure people are wearing masks and, you know, all of those things. And then, you know, they are doing incredibly extreme testing every single day. Like these guys can't even, you know, enter facilities without getting temperature checks and all the things that you should be doing. So they're already there. Those parameters are already very strictly in place. And I think they would only increase that. I thought one thing that was interesting too, and another part of our college football reporting at ESPN was the way that the ACC laid out how they would report positive tests to opponents, you know, because that's the other thing here. And that's kind of been part of the baseball situation with the Marlins, you know, okay, did the Phillies test positive? You know, that's where I think people get concerned even more so, is trying to see how can this be contained even amongst a team. And that's not obviously a positive scenario.
Laura Rutledge with us this morning. And then there's the issue of Caleb Farley, the Virginia Tech cornerback, mm-hmm. predicted to be a very high draft pick in the 2021 NFL draft. Basically said, not going to play football this season in college because I want to make sure for health reasons I'm ready to roll for the NFL, thus being the first to do that. Here is Caleb Farley on why he decided to opt out.
After much consideration with my family, I have decided to opt out of the 2020 college football season and began preparing for the 2021 NFL draft. I am opting out due to uncertain health conditions and regulations and all the other opt-outs going on in football right now. I tragically lost my mother, Robin, January 2nd, 2018, to an illness, and I cannot afford to lose another parent or loved one. Though the competitor in me badly wants to play this season, I cannot ignore what's going on in my heart, and I must make the decision that brings me the most peace. So thank you, Virginia Tech, my coaches, teammates, and anyone else who has supported me in the past. I wish you all the best and stay safe and God bless.
We had talked about this when the whole process was going on. Would someone do this? We talked to the father of a top prospect about whether or not he would think about
Patrick
it.
Surtain, yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Surtain. And apparently this is the first. And Laura, if we're being honest about it, it's probably not going to be the last guy to do this.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be. And I do think, I mean, you heard what Caleb said about losing his mother, which is a huge part of his decision and the decision that he felt he needed to make for his family. And so I do think, I mean, it's similar to these guys in the NFL that are opting out. They're specific cases to every single person. You know, what's going on in your life that is going to make this not work for you? And that's where I just think everyone needs to extend a lot of understanding there. What's interesting about, you know, just the mechanics of what may happen here, if college football season is pushed back and maybe, I mean, there are models that push it all the way to the spring. And you guys know, I mean, even months ago, we were talking about that on this very show, and it seemed really crazy. Now it doesn't seem quite as crazy. But if that happened and it affected the NFL draft, you know, there are some of these, you know, NFL scouts and teams, the way that they're looking at the draft, I think it even, we could all probably agree, it even influenced the Seahawks getting Jamal Adams. They're looking at the draft thinking, what does the draft even look like? You know, you've got to make decisions almost as if that's going to be affected some way. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys that make a decision just based on that. And the way that affects their NFL stock, you know, could be significant. It could be that they're just having a base things on tape that happened, you know, a year ago or even longer than that. How do guys stay in competitive shape? It's going to be very difficult, but everyone's going to have to, you know, I think sort of adjust around that. And either way, what's really going to be interesting, I mean, look, Caleb Farley is a very nice prospect, and I expect him to be a highly drafted player. But what do we look at when maybe a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields? I don't think that's happening yet, but I think that if this thing keeps getting pushed back, or, well, look, it hasn't gotten pushed back yet. If it does get pushed back, I do think that some of these big time prospects are going to have to look at this from their own personal situation and make a decision that makes sense for them.
Laura Rutledge here with us on Golic and Wingo, and I completely agree there. We've seen even the pro levels when you hear, you know, the Ryan Braun's of the world coming out and saying he's not sure if he wants to continue to go or maybe opt out in the middle, that if your team season starts to go sideways and you're a high draft prospect, are you bolting in the middle of this season and preparing for that for your own reasons? And Laura, that kind of actually, you mentioned the spring model, which was interesting. Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, came out and basically talked about the spring model as if it was almost not just a last resort as far as an overall plan, but should things not go well in the fall, maybe a last ditch effort there, an option for these two schools to pick back up and try again in the spring as sort of a second chance in that. From anything you've heard around the SEC, is that the way that more people are starting to view the spring option, not as a plan C to this, but maybe a break if it goes wrong in the fall?
Yeah, look, I think the main key there is that if something goes wrong in the fall, I mean, there are obviously major issues there from the standpoint of health and safety, but it's also that they're trying to get as much financial gain as they possibly can in during a fiscal year, or during the year that, you know, would be classified as the 2020-21 school year. And so I think that's where, you know, you might see some games picked up in the spring. I mean, look, let's be honest, it would frankly be bizarre at that point. I think that's where you would say, why, if you're Clemson, for instance, why is Trevor Lawrence even playing then? You know, I think that might be the moment where some of those guys just say, look, we've got to focus on the NFL. And I can't speak for Trevor. I think he would hold on as long as possible to try and keep playing for Clemson. But that is a realistic thing if in maybe a worst case scenario situation where they would have to try and pick it up. The other thing about the spring that I think is interesting, and that athletic directors, school presidents have continually said to me over this time, is that they are trying to look at how could they have as many fans in the stadiums as safely as possible. Some think, look, by that point, would there be a vaccine? Would it be safer to gather large crowds of people? And maybe that's something that, you know, they would say that's worth it to at least try and wait for that. I think still the plan is trying to start on time, trying to stick to the schedule that has been put out by the ACC and a couple of these other conferences. And we'll see, you know, over the next coming days, how that continues to develop with some of these other conferences as well.
Laura Rutledge joining us, ESPN SEC Nation, and the new host of NFL Live. That's getting ready to start up again soon with you hosting that and the new crew there. So let's let you start on this conversation before we continue it. The NFL Network put out their list of top players, and in the top 10, one Patrick Mahomes is number 4. It's Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Aaron Donald, Patrick Mahomes, Michael Thomas. That's your top 5. You get first crack at what you think about Mahomes being number 4.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, I'm sure, saw Mahomes tweeting about this himself. I think he's too low at four. What are we doing? I mean, he's got to be higher up than that. I love the fact. I mean, here's the thing. There are so many stars in the NFL right now. It's the way that it always is. So it is kind of hard to sit there and say, oh, man, you know, this guy doesn't deserve to be in the top five. There's just no way. I love Aaron Donald. He's dynamic. He's a game wrecker. He is the guy that quarterbacks don't want to see. But yet you can't put him ahead of Patrick Mahomes. I love Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson is the future of the NFL. He's going to continue to improve on his game and continues to get better and better. But I'm not even sure you can put him ahead of Patrick Mahomes. Like, how did they get to that point? So I would rearrange that. I would put Patrick Mahomes number one, and then maybe Lamar Jackson number two. And then from there, you know, you can kind of say, all right, maybe you put Aaron Donald number three, Russell Wilson four, yeah. Right? And then that's a debate too. I mean, I'm not even sure that I would put Aaron Donald ahead of Russell Wilson, but I might. And then sure, I'm good with, you know, Michael Thomas at five, but where's DeAndre Hopkins? Where's Julio Jones? I mean, it's so hard to sit there and say that that list makes a lot of sense. So I think you're going to see all these guys got all mad about their Madden rankings recently because players really do care about that. They're going to be mad about this too, which is great. Like, let's keep firing them up. I love it.
Yeah. You know why it's hard to say that list makes sense? Because it doesn't.
No,
it doesn't. I was trying to be nice about it.
Yeah.
I
appreciate the way you tried to sort of bait that, but let's be honest, that list, that top 10 is straight trash.
It's a stinky list.
Stinky list. Yeah. Stinky list.
All right, Laura, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Laura.
I appreciate you guys. Big fan
Thank
of the
you.
Show.
Thanks, Laura.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Let's bring in one of those guests on the Shell Penzo Performance Line, our fine football analyst, Marcus Spears. Marcus, do you want to live in a world where there's a list that says Patrick Mahomes is the fourth best player in the NFL?
No, not at all. guys, first of all, good morning. Second of all, no, but I can bring sort of a caveat. The fact that he missed some games, that's the only thing I can relate this to, is the fact that Pat Mahomes missed some games, and this is by no means to take away from anything that Lamar Jackson did. He was the league MVP. We get it. We understand it, but we know damn well he's not the best quarterback or the best player in the league right now. That is Patrick Mahomes. That is actually Kansas City Royals part owner,
yeah,
Patrick
yeah.
Mahomes, who just bought a Ferrari and got a check that's going to total the sum of $500 million at some point in his football career.
Well, Marcus, I feel like Marcus, I feel like 2020 finally just said I needed to check Patrick Mahomes in some way, shape, or form, right? Because if you go down the list, three straight playoff wins, he was down double digits in each one of them. He wants to win them all by mm-hmm. double digits. Wins the Super Bowl MVP, part owner of the Kansas City Royals because he signed a $500 million contract. I guess this list is living proof that 2020 has to hit everybody.
No doubt. Nobody's immune to what is happening in this year of our 2020. Here's the most important thing about 2020, fellas. It is going to humble you as an individual at some point, all right? I got humbled yesterday. I was pushing sleds while my son was at practice, and I thought my heart was about to explode out of my chest. And then I realized, you know what? It's coming for us all. Now, we got to figure out how to manage the damage, and we see it now with this list of the NFL 100. It is people heads are popping off because they're trying to manage the damage of seeing the best player, arguably one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen, if not the best in the first 2 year run, not be the number one player after winning Super Bowl MVP and erasing deficits that we never seen in the playoffs. So there you go. It's getting everybody.
So I'm wondering, and I can't answer this. Mike can't answer this. He was undrafted. I was a 10th rounder. We were never in anybody's top of anything. So you were a first rounder, so at least you're way more qualified to answer this. Why do guys give a damn so much? Why do they care about their Madden rating so much? Why do they see a list like this and Keenan Allen is tweeting to other receivers, you know I'm better than you? Why do they care so much?
Because, man, you guys know this, and thank you for the flattery, MG, but you being drafted 10 rounds don't have a damn thing to do with how good you were when you played. And it don't make me more qualified to be to speak on this. You guys know how our ego is when we play football. You know the Madden rating is very important to the players because everybody plays it and everybody sees it, especially these NFL top 100 lists, because most of the time it's the players. Now, let me say this. This list was null and void to me when Carson Wentz wasn't on it. That does not mean I don't respect where a lot of these guys are and how they're judged by their peers or whoever's doing the voting. But when you have guys that is clearly, I would say, a top 25, top 30 player not even on the list, then it makes it irrelevant. Because now we're having a conversation about maybe what you like or what you enjoyed watching more. And in Lamar's case, right, it's a huge argument to say Lamar should be the number one player in the NFL top 100. And possibly from a player's perspective, you could see that because he's so tremendously hard to defend, especially with his ability to run and how good he was throwing the ball this year. So it's not far-fetched to think that Lamar could be the number one guy, but these guys care about it because everybody sees it. This is the big NFL 100 list that everybody pays attention to. We going to talk about it. And obviously the Madden rating sticks with you forever. So you'll be able to go back and your kids will be able to look on there and be like, Dad, like my kids look on there, Dad, you were 82, you sucked. Because only they only talk about the 99 and the 90s people in that game. So, you know, I'm going to have to deal with my kids, especially my son one day, going look at my Madden rating. And I'm trying to hide it as much as possible, telling them they don't even make the version of the game anymore that I was on. But eventually he going to know I'm lying, and he going to look at that and say, Dad, you wasn't really that good. You was an 80.
My God. That's a tough house you live in. Man. Where anywhere else, showing your kids that I was in Madden, the video game, and I was this great player, was the accomplishment. MG, you got to hide that because you're so ready to get roasted.
MG Junior, this house I live in is competitive, bro. Like, my daughter is a top volleyball player in the country. My wife got drafted before me, which she reminds me of all the time to the WNBA. And my son is 11 years old. He's about 5'9", maybe, plays baseball and can launch it. All right? So I'm really falling behind. I'm the guy that played in the NFL for 9 years. And when I say that in my household, don't nobody give a damn.
Well, just show them the paycheck that bought that house. Yeah. You'll be fine as a first-round pick.
That's all right. I can say, Marcus, that was always the one that worked for my dad was look up, see this roof, and know what paid for it. So you might have a good
shot. On the ceiling.
That's it.
Absolutely.
That's it.
You might have a good shot with that one. Marcus Spears with us, going to be part of the new NFL Live crew rolling out later in the middle of the month of August. Certainly looking forward to that whole crew. But Marcus, as a part of that, like the NFL you guys are looking at is going to be different, and we've seen a lot of players. I'm curious, have you been surprised by the number of players we've already seen opt out of this upcoming NFL season?
I must say I've been a bit surprised, but not like to the point of being taken back, right? And obviously you see Damian Williams, running back from Kansas City, opt out. And this is what this is something that I thought could potentially happen, because if you look at most of these guys, it's not them making decisions about themselves. And, like, guys, we got to be honest, that's the scary part about this virus. It is your transmission of it to somebody that can't fight it. Obviously, Solder had cancer in his history, in his kids' history. And it's a lot of guys that's having to weigh this against the risk of not only immunity, but their immune systems and all of that being prepared to handle this while playing a professional sport with that history. So, man, it's tough. It's tough to see. And we knew, you know, I think a lot of people calculated players voicing their opinions and being real constructive of how they wanted to go about this. And certain players with history that we're watching And just some players opting out because they don't want to, you know, deal with the whole coronavirus thing while the league is going on. You got to respect it. And it's something we talked about earlier in a few shows that I was doing. Like, you have to respect those decisions because you don't know each individual situation that these guys walk into after they leave the practice field or the practice facility. And the fact that you can't bubble them and keep them, you know, contained for, which I don't think would have happened anyway, but to keep guys in containment for that long of a season, you were running the risk of this. So, nah, not super surprising to me, because these guys are making decisions based off mostly their loved ones that will have problems if they contracted this virus.
Absolutely. You saw so many players signifying that. And again, they have until Monday to opt out. Marcus, as always, we appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you, sir.
My guys, thank you, man. Appreciate it. I'll talk to you all soon.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
All right, guys, book it. You know the drill. You add book it to any of your hot take. It's a hot take multiplier. It allows you to feel like Stephen A. Smith, if only for a moment.
You can book it.
Put it in the books.
You know what time it is. It's book it time, damn it.
Let's go.
Let's get this thing cracking.
Let's go.
All right, Junior.
Guys.
Tee it up.
Yeah. Go look and Wingo. Is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. It is Golic and Wingo. It is Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. We're going to play Book It. One last time, guys.
One last time for this show.
Mount up.
I'm going to shove it. Oh, sorry.
Trey?
He
not
just can't
today.
Help himself.
Not today, Trey.
Not today, Trey.
Both.
Not today.
Last.
Put it
book
the
it.
Books.
Get behind me, Satan.
God. Jesus, take the wheel. So, I give you a nice spicy little take. If you want to really heat it up, you're going to shout, book it. We play the sounder. It sounds great. Everyone has a great time. And if you don't, you won't. And we move on. You guys ready?
Ready.
All right. Trey, I'm going to start with you on this one.
Yep.
Notre Dame.
Yep.
Your 2020 ACC champions. You going to book it?
Out of respect for both of you, I will book it.
Wow.
Wow.
I will for you guys.
What does your analyst part say?
No. Clemson.
Listen, I want to book this with my heart more than anything in the world, and I absolutely hope it happens. If I were to sit there and try and be as unbiased as I can, football.
Nah, what have you ever been unbiased?
I'm going to say Clemson's the best team in that conference.
See, so this is why I'm picking you up. You're doing the right thing for the team, so I'm backing you up and saying I'm
booking
it for you.
That doesn't mean that when the game's going on, I'm not rooting like hell for Notre Dame. No doubt about that, but. Clemson, you have to give them their due. They're the best team in the conference right now.
Since 2000, only 5 schools have won the ACC football championship, and 17 have been won by a trio of programs. Florida State leads 7 in that time. Clemson with 6, Virginia Tech 4, Maryland with 1, and Wake Forest with 1 in that time. I'll book it with
that.
We're riding high in all this.
Book it.
Listen. Justin Ross and T. Higgins are both gone. Justin Ross going to miss a year after
that
surgery there.
Brent Venables is losing
maybe the most valuable defensive piece in college football last year in Isaiah Simmons.
Too.
Come on.
Let's just get drunk this morning.
Book it.
We're coming into the ACC, kicking down the doors, breaking stuff, throwing tables all over the place, and then
also playing.
Paying them a lot of money in the meantime, too, because we're splitting that NBC deal for the year. Anyway. Dad,
yep.
The Power Fives will make a decision to break away from the NCAA in the next 3 years. You're going to book it?
No shot. Absolutely positively.
No, sir.
No shot on booking it. Look, listen. The Texas AD, Chris Del Conte, said on Freddie and Fitzsimmons, he wished the Power Five conferences acted as one. They can't. They can't. They can't all get together and act as one. And because we know who will act like the big boys on the block, right? That's Greg Sankey and the SEC. And they're not going to get together and work as one. I've said this before, and I'll continue to say it. Absolutely do not book this one.
I'm booking it.
Book it.
I think for a long time they want to try and find a way to get away from the tentacles.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
And I think they're finally realizing, why do we need this? Like, why? What is it? How does it benefit us? So, yeah, I think they will.
I am not going to book it just because of the 3-year timeline. I think this is coming. I think it will be unavoidable at some point. And I just, I look at this and say, we've already seen some versions of this where there are conferences working together and all this. And I think we've seen every time someone breaks news, we've seen conference commissioners, ADs lamenting the fact that it all wasn't done together. I think it desires there. And I think in better circumstances, they're going to be able to execute on that. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo. We are playing Book It one last time. Dad?
Yep.
Shohei Ohtani is back. You going to book it?
I want you to Shohei the way.
No. Listen, when you say he's back, we're talking about him as a hitter and a pitcher. Now, he had a home run yesterday. He needs nine more to become the third Japanese player in baseball history with 50 home runs, joining Hideki Matsui and Ichiro. But if that's hitting, fine. But we're talking about both hitting and pitching. And the pitching we know has been a struggle. So to say he's back to what we think about him, no, he's not.
I'm not going to book it either, because I think it eventually, also, they're going to have to decide. Yep. We had Timmy Kirchner on with us the other day, and he's like, eventually they're going to have to choose what they want him to be, whether they want him to be a hitter or want him to be a pitcher.
And he said the choice, he would rather him be a pitcher.
Pitcher, yeah. So I'm not going to book it.
Man, you guys are a tough crowd. Shohei is back, all right? Knocking dingers is my only metric for are you back or not. It is a simple binary case in
this. It's the Big Al metric.
It is. It doesn't have to be this complicated sliding Texas is back kind of scale in all this one. We were waiting to see a sign of life from Shohei after a tough start to the season. Sign of life secured. That man is back. B-A-C-K, back.
I just spelled it right.
I'm glad I did, too. I was nervous when I hit A. Trey, Zion plays in the opener and scores at least 10 points. You going to book it?
Book it.
You can book, book it.
Book it, book it, book it, book it. I know we're going to have Rachel Nichols on with us later. She said they were going to be very cautious with
Game
him.
Game time decision.
I think he's going to play, and I think he'll be limited minutes, but I think the new and improved Zion, who looks like a marauding beast with his new body, I think he's going to get at least.
Yeah, listen, he said he's ready to play. He said he's ready to play on limited minutes. He said he'd be shocked if any baller said that they weren't ready. So we know he is, but players don't make the decisions a lot of times, though maybe he can have some influence. I absolutely book this. I don't know how much he plays, but I do think he scores at least 10 points and is a force on the court.
I'll book this one, too. It's been, and I mean, he's delivered so effortlessly almost since the beginning and since he stepped on the court. Since he's been a part of that team, the difference in their net rating with him on and off the court is just under 14 points. It is the highest in the league. So I hope he's back. I believe he'll be back. And then it's the charge to see if he can get to the postseason and give us that matchup with LeBron that everyone is looking for. Trey?
Yeah.
Tiger finishes in the top 10 of the PGA Championship next week. You going to book it?
Boy, that's going to be hard for you.
Couple of things here. One, he's had success at Harding Park in the past. He was part of a President's Cup team that won there, and he won a World Golf Championship event there. I don't know, man. He's just played so limited. I can't. I want to book it, but I can't. I can't. I want it with my soul.
No.
I can't book it.
Kind of like I signed with Notre Dame.
Correct.
Listen, I agree. I want it. I want him in contention.
Yeah.
But it is just so hard to look at his situation right now and say he can book that. I can't book it, though I want it.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to book that one either. It is tough right now. We're sitting here, and I feel like I'm always fighting this battle of how to deal with my expectations for Tiger. And maybe cautious optimism is the phrase for 2020 as a whole with all of this. It's what we need to do to guard ourselves in a lot of things, and so it's what I'll do here. All right, last book it forever. Dad, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be your Rookie of the Year in the NFL. You going to book it?
Wow. Boy, his odds have dropped in everything, right? Since, again, Damian Williams is opted out, the starting running back for Kansas City. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to get plenty of opportunity. Who are the other guys he's going to be battling here? You know, Joe Burrow is going to step on the field right away.
Yeah.
Of the other quarterbacks, probably no one at least right out of the gate.
Ruggs and Judy, maybe?
Yeah, and a wide receiver. That's
a hard
tough
one.
Spot. He's got a good chance. You know what the hell? I'll book it. Why
you
not?
Can book it.
God knows he's going to get. I know there's a lot of talent on that team, but he's going to get himself some touches.
It's a perfect fit.
It really is.
It's literally a perfect fit for what Andy Reid and company want to do, and he has the best player in college football to decide when to. I mean, NFL decide when to give him the ball. So yeah, I'm going to book it.
Did Josh Jacobs win Rookie of the Year last year?
I think he did. Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year. Yeah. I want to make sure. Oh, no. Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray.
And that's why I'm going to book this one, just so I can see Jason Fitz's head explode, knowing that Josh Jacobs didn't win it, but a running back won it the year after that one.
Wow.
Run and book that.
There you go.
Golic
and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Our next guest. Well, I'm sorry. I have to say, despite her continued greatness and all-around just tremendousness, has slacked. She has not been named to a new Hall of Fame in about a year, which is ridiculous.
We're getting worried. That's the Hall of Fame's fault.
Yes, you're right. That's not a Hey DB problem. That's Hall of Fame's problems, not respecting our next guest. And we are delighted to be joined and say, Hey DB to Doris Burke. How are you?
Well, good morning. And I think I will join down here in the bubble a Hall of Fame for which you will be most proud, and that is eating and drinking.
Hey,
there we go.
When people say,
I might have put on 15 pounds down here in the bubble already, gentlemen.
When people say, why are you friends with Doris Burke? I'm just going to play that clip.
It's like like freshman year in college again, the freshman 15. Huh?
Oh, nothing. But you know what, Doris? Like, you deserve all of the nicest things in the world, so I'm glad you're treating yourself down there in the NBA bubble. How has it been getting used to that environment with all the eating and drinking going on?
You know, it's interesting, guys. I am not, as you know, they have different tiers of credentials, and green is the one where you're closest to the players. We are in yellow because we're calling the game about 75 feet off the floor. So our restrictions are a little bit less than those, you know, in direct proximity to the players. What I will tell you is I knew this was a massive undertaking. When I started to hear the plan come together and all the reporting on the plan and then reading some of the plan, what you find out very quickly is this was as massive and maybe bigger than you thought it was. No detail has fallen short from the NBA. And I feel as safe as I possibly can. When I saw Greg Popovich say this may be the safest place on earth, and obviously having all the players test negative over their first couple of tests here is significant, and we're progressing, and we begin tonight, and I can't wait.
We are going to talk to Rachel Nichols, I think, at about 9:30 Eastern. She had talked about some of the stories of things, just what you mentioned, Doris, going on behind the scenes of what is making this whole operation run and run so well down in Orlando at Disney. But games are going to start. We're all happy about that. But then after we're all happy, I kind of take a breath and pause and say, okay, in these eight games, is your expectation that, especially for the upper tier teams, that these eight games are going to be treated more like preseason games and you'll see less minutes by the stars?
Yeah, you know, I think especially for those teams that are at the top, the Milwaukees, the Lakers, the Clippers, I think seeding doesn't matter. You know, the home court advantage is basically non-existent. And so I think they're trying to stay healthy. They're trying to catch a rhythm. And something young Mike said, you know, just prior to you coming to me has really sort of been at the forefront of my mind, because when the hiatus happened and then we knew we were coming down here, my thought was, I give the Lakers the best chance. There isn't a scenario in the playoffs. There isn't a difficulty placed in LeBron James's path that he hasn't already seen. We knew he'd have his team in incredible shape and you know, do what he can to get them in rhythm. But to me, the Milwaukee Bucks, because they have continuity, because they have so grooved their offensive system to run to those five spots, to maximize the three-point line, to enhance everything that Giannis brings to the table, and then to play historically elite defense. Like, we cannot lose sight of the fact that the Bucks are playing a level of defense that we have not seen in the NBA. They are extraordinary inside the paint. They give up the least percentage at the most valuable real estate. And, you know, listen, can somebody who gets hot over a seven-game series from three maybe beat them, or what happened in the East Finals last year where they just shot it abysmally from three? Yes, those are possibilities, but I thought he was right on point, because I do think the teams that have grooved their system have an advantage down here in this scenario.
Doris Burke with us talking about the restart of the NBA season, which begins tonight with a doubleheader and then in earnest tomorrow. Doris, we talked a lot earlier about there's no franchise that perhaps winning a championship would mean more and be more significant than the Milwaukee Bucks because of their uncertain status, no matter what he says, with Giannis Antetokounmpo going forward. Mm-hmm. So if they're the franchise that could be changed the most by winning an NBA championship – What is the possibility that LeBron's legacy, as great as it is, could be even more enhanced by winning a fourth title with a third different team? And I know the same scenario exists for Kawhi, but LeBron is LeBron. He takes the oxygen in the room, and the comparisons have already always been there to the best to ever play. What would that mean in your eyes to LeBron's legacy?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously his legacy is as one of the greatest to ever do it, and certainly the greatest I've ever seen up close and personal to do it. I think it's secure, but I think obviously anytime you add a championship to that resume, and listen, let's not deny the fact that he's probably playing next to the single most talented player. I mean, you could make the case for Dwayne Wade, but the fact of the matter is, look at the number of assists that LeBron has to Anthony Davis. It is by far the most to any individual player in his career. Chris Bosh is a distant second to what he's been able to connect with Anthony Davis. But, you know, what I wonder about and what I think may be being under-talked about is the absence of Avery Bradley and what must be defined in the eight seeding games for the Lakers, and that is who are the guards that take up those minutes. Because Avery Bradley, if you look no further than what he did against the Clippers in their two defining wins in March just prior to the hiatus, his ball pressure at the point of attack, his ability to sort of lead the defense and be disruptive, and then the number of threes made against the Los Angeles Clippers. Like, is it J.R. Smith or Deion Waiters who gets an opportunity? Is Alex Caruso, who's been so critical to what they've done this year, able to provide enough offense with the defense that he plays? What happens when LeBron James is off the floor for the Los Angeles Lakers? His minutes will be huge, but there's going to be 2 or 3 minute windows where he gets a rest. And those can define a series. What happens? I'm really curious about that.
Doris Burke joining us here on Golic and Wingo. And that's the talk at the top, of, especially the top of the conferences and or the NBA championship. But there are other things we're looking at as well, especially in that first game, Utah playing the Pelicans. That's Zion Williamson. Everybody, I'm sure, many people are hoping New Orleans can get to that A slot to play the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. But there's no real thought of New Orleans really doing anything as far as being near the top this year. So how do you think Zion will be played in these eight games trying to get to the playoffs? And how do you think he should be played?
Yeah, my guess is they have taken the long view this entire time, because I think they know the kind of talent they have in Zion Williamson. And so, and I don't think this is necessarily limited to just the Pelicans. You know, what happens if you get out of the gate slowly across the board on any number of teams? You know, I saw Adrian Wojnarowski, you know, reported, you know, a few weeks ago that basically some of these teams would look at this in the long view and say, listen, we're not going to put our players at risk in any way. That will be fascinating to me, is if some of these teams, like a New Orleans, gets out of the gate slowly, what happens to the minutes and the productivity of their respective stars versus a team like the Phoenix Suns, who Monty Williams said, other than the teams competing for a championship, no one has more at stake here than us. You know, we're a young team on the rise, and you can see it. I had them, you know, we sort of did a dry run with the Phoenix Suns, and they played it, you know, like this was a regular season game, because they're trying to maximize the 11 games they have here. Philosophically, I think you'll see approaches across the board from these organizations.
And it all begins tonight, and we'll see what happens when it all starts. Doris?
Don't let me go without saying I'm going to miss the three of you. It has been my privilege to be on the show with all of you. I have admired your work. I admire more your character as men. So I just thank you for letting me be a part of your show over the last couple of years, guys. It's meant the world to me.
And this is from a woman who I once called Boris Dirk.
Yes, you did.
Yes. Well, Doris, you know that love is real.
We appreciate you helping this show sound way smarter than it really is for all those years. Thank you, Doris.
Thank you, Doris.
Thanks, Stevie.
Be well, guys.
Golic
makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today.
We're we're all excited that the NBA is back, but I imagine our excitement about the NBA being back is nowhere near the level of our next guest, who is our guy to lead us through the NBA wilderness as it returns as our play-by-play voice, none other than the incomparable Mike Breen, who joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike, thanks. Good morning. Hope everyone associated with you is healthy and safe. How excited are you tomorrow night in that Celtics-Bucks game to say for the first time, bang, after all these months?
I might say it on the first layup, for crying out loud. I'm so fired up. Would you guys like an update on one of your previous guests?
Yes, please.
Yes.
All right, I'm on the 15th floor of the hotel, and Doris Burke, after appearing on your show, immediately went to the first tee. I'm overlooking the golf course. Oh, yeah. She just missed a 3-foot putt on the first hole and was so annoyed, she threw her putter into the lake. Now, she's trying to retrieve it at this particular moment, but I don't think she's going to be able to get it. And she's going to have to putt with a 6-iron or a 5-iron for the rest of the round.
If you can scream down, Doris, there are things in those lakes at Disney that you don't want to mess with. Leave the putter where it is. Well, we need Doris.
I think the biggest question, Mike, to anybody who golfs is, why did she putt the 3-footer? That's in the circle of friendship. Yeah. That's a gimme as far as I'm concerned.
Especially how much she apparently has been drinking down there. Yeah. So, you know.
That's a great point, guys.
All right. So, Mike, as we get ready again, basketball starts tonight. We're all excited about it. So while we're hyped for games, these are 8 games to kind of settle the seeding here. What are your kind of expectations, especially from the higher level teams, on how they're going to play these?
Well, to me, Mike, that one of the really intriguing parts is the unknown. I mean, this changes everything, in my opinion. You know, clearly the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks, they were the best team prior to the suspension, and they still are. But I think the gap is narrowed because of all these intangibles that are thrown in. Intangibles that we don't know how they're going to play out, from individual players to certain teams. I think it's just it's a crapshoot right now in terms of what's going to happen, because it's so unprecedented. The fact that there's no fans, the fact that the players are not going to be with their families. I just think anybody who makes predictions is just throwing up a wild guess, because it's all so new. And that to me is one of the real intriguing parts, this unknown, this thing that we've never seen before, that's going to happen starting tonight.
And starting tonight, and certainly then tomorrow night, you'll be on the call, Bucks Celtics in that one. And we were just talking to Doris before her putter throw in a lot of this about the otherworldly defense that the Bucks had been playing during the course of this season. Is there the feeling that that's going to be the easiest part to reclaim, that as the shots are slow to come back, that defense could be the thing that gives them a huge leg up in all this?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt, although many of the players, guys, have been saying that the setup in the venues, and there are 3 different venues, you know, obviously there's lighting on the court, but it's so dark around the court, and a lot of the shooters have been saying it's a great shooting arena to play in. So, you know, the offense might have a little edge there. The other thing, too, is that a lot of the coaches have said they've had more practices in the past couple of weeks than they had during the course of the entire regular season. That's the biggest beef from coaches with the schedules and the load management and not practicing after back-to-back games, that they don't have enough time to practice. Well, they've had a lot of time to practice, and I think that's one of the reasons why the play has actually been a little sharper than we expected. We thought it was going to be just a ragged mess to begin with, but there's actually been some really good basketball played in the scrimmages.
Mike Breen with us. Mike, you talk about everything sort of being an unknown because of how different this approach is going to be, the 8 games to finish up the regular season, then the tournament-style approach to getting in and the postseason. Well, one team that was very consistent in the regular season was the Philadelphia Sixers, 76ers. When they played on their home court, they were great. When they played away, they were not great. Do you think that's going to help them or hurt them at this point, knowing that every game is a neutral court?
Well, Ben Simmons was saying that one of the reasons he's sorry the fans aren't there is because the Philly fans, when they booed the home team, would motivate them. And the Philly fans are known to be so tough even on their home team. But I think that's a great question. And it's, you know, they obviously were inspired by their home court. And I think that was more of a positive for them than the road negative. I mean, to me, going in for Philadelphia, the key is always the health of the two stars. And neither one of them were healthy during the regular season. And I think that really played into why they were so up and down. Both are extremely healthy right now. And I think that they're a team that absolutely nobody wants to play. There's a few candidates in that thing. But I think Philadelphia is going to be fine because they're just healthy. I think it's more of that than it is anything to do with home court advantage for that particular team.
Let me just say, I can confirm about Philadelphia fans. In Philadelphia, we're talking to Mike Breen. He's on the call tomorrow for Milwaukee and Boston. As far as the team aspect of this, Mike, we were talking about pressure on a team. And with Milwaukee and trying to be that upper echelon team and get a championship to persuade Giannis to stay in Milwaukee, because this has been such an odd year, do you still think this year will have a major effect on that, whether they win the title or lose the title?
Yeah, I think it will to some extent, because he has clearly stated time and time again that, you know, his goal was to be the best player. He proved that last year and probably this year again, because, you know, more than likely he's going to win another MVP. But he wants to win championships. And if he doesn't feel that's going to happen in Milwaukee, then I think he might look elsewhere. But it's way too early to speculate with him. He is just one of the most focused professional players I've ever seen. And he's an old school guy. He's not one of those that's working out with other guys on teams during the off season. He's not one of those guys that's doing hugs before and during games. He wants to crush his opponent. And right now he's just so focused on winning this year and thinks that they can. You know, they've already made some adjustments. They didn't sign Malcolm Brogdon last year because they knew they had to save some money when his time came up. I really believe he's one of those guys. He's not even thinking about next year or the year after or where he's going to play. He's just thinking about winning every single game in the playoffs to get that championship.
Mike, I'm curious, is that single-minded focus there is not surprising, given everything that we've seen about Giannis publicly there? He's one of the guys we do know a lot about and have our eye on. LeBron James and the Lakers are certainly getting that billing, but they're part of opening night playing a Clippers team that so many people had as the odds-on favorite going in that hasn't really felt like it's gotten a ton of buzz, which seems like the Kawhi Leonard effect on all this. So I'm curious, as the Clippers have been inside the bubble, certainly they've dealt with everything with Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, all the these things surrounding guys not being there. But how is the health of this team and the continuity stacking up for their potential run now?
Well, they haven't really had any chance for continuity because so many of their key guys have either left the bubble or got to the bubble late. So it's hard to tell. And they're a team because, you know, they're two best players. It's in their first year playing together. So they still have some work to be done. But you want to talk about defense, just put Patrick Beverley, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard on the court at the same time. Those are three starters. Those are three of the premier elite defenders in the NBA. They are just a beast defensively. So if they're healthy, they're going to be fine. But I do think that Doc Rivers wishes he had more time with all this practice time to have everybody there. But unfortunately, they just had too many key guys missing. By the way, the picture that you have up, that must have been taken at least 25 years ago. I don't have a dark hair on my head anymore. Trey, you know, I've talked about this. We're members of the NDC, the No Dye Club in broadcasters.
Yes. There you go, baby.
There's not many of us, so I'm a big proponent of gray hair. So
yeah, wear it with pride, baby.
Love that.
We've earned every one of them. So we'll see what happens going forward as the grand experiment begins. Mike, we appreciate your time this morning, and hey, really looking forward to hearing your call tomorrow night.
I can't wait, guys, and congratulations on just, you know, putting out this. I'm going to make an NBA analogy, and especially for Mike Senior. We always talked about the San Antonio Spurs making the playoffs year after year, winning multiple championships, and the phrase we always used for them was sustained excellence. Well, that's you, Mike Golic, and what you've done for, you know, a couple of decades now. It's just sustained excellence year after year, and you've got so many fans and admirers in our industry.
Mike, I appreciate that very much, and always appreciated you coming on and helping out the show and making us sound smarter, and I look forward to the day my hair is completely the color of yours.
It'll never happen. It's ridiculous. It's just, it's really annoying, Mike, but we appreciate
Thank
your
you
kind
much,
words.
Mike.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, guys, thank you.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.